Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Ellie Molina. Before we bring her on, a couple of announcements. This summer, October and I will be filming and producing a documentary. We can't say much about it. It's going to be amazing. But we are going to ask for your help. We're completely self-funded, and we would be asking for donations for travel, equipment, etc. I know all of you really enjoy what's in the works, and anyone that donates will also be listed in our credits. You can use the link in the description if you would like to help us out with our new documentary project. Also, new free episodes always available on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Our website is forbiddenknowledge.news. It's the home of the Forbidden Knowledge Network. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And finally, check out C60 Purple Power. It may be the most powerful antioxidant known to man. The list of benefits that it's helped me with is incredible, but check them out for yourself. Click the link in the description, and you can get 10% off your order plus free shipping. Today I want to welcome Ellie Molina. She is a former university adjunct and highly recognized educator. She holds a master's degree in linguistics from NYU and has been educating for 4 decades. She has appeared on network TV discussing intuitive development in children, and she is founder of PsyKids, where children and adults learn to develop, trust, and utilize their psychic and intuitive abilities. She also co-founded a private school for children, where children learn to use more of their minds in a very different manner. She teaches and guides you to work with your own powerful intuitive abilities while introducing you to mind power techniques. Ellie, welcome. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for having me, Chris. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Yes, I've been looking forward to it. This is going to be a fascinating discussion. You've developed programs to teach children and their parents to trust their intuition and develop consciousness awareness. And these programs can harness skills like remote viewing, telepathy, telekinesis, and others that can actually be applied to everyday life. So like I said, this is going to be so interesting. I've been looking forward to this. But this is your first time on. I'd love for you to tell us more just about your background and what led you down this path of research.
Okay, thanks. Well, Chris, I think that everybody's always doing the things that they know how to do best. Some way, somehow is where we end up. And not that I knew that I was an intuitive psychic child when I was 3 years old, but turns out that around 3, 4, 5, I started having experiences. And I had visions. I walked with a close friend of ours who had passed away. And it was in a dream. And I remember her now. Of course, the language I'm using right now is not that a six-year-old or five-year-old would have used. But in the dream, we were walking and she was vivid and I was holding her hand. And I said to her, I thought you're dead. How can I see you? And then she said, well, the dead walk among the living and only few can see. And I remember that vividly. And then not too long after that, I was sitting in the house with my parents. I was still little. I was still probably under 5. And this huge painting fell off the wall. And I looked at my dad and I said, oh, Mr. Robertson just passed away. And then lo and behold, Mr. Robertson had just died. And it was like, okay, all right. My parents were cool about it. They must have seen that I was following this particular path early. And I even laughed because when I was in kindergarten, my Halloween costume was a fortune teller outfit. I was the only fortune teller in the elementary school. And then when I was 10, I think I look back now and I think they really did indulge me. They gave me a black and white TV set and I was allowed to keep it in my room. And this is back in the day. And I went to sleep watching Alfred Hitchcock, One Step Beyond, The Twilight Zone. And Chris, for me, this was reality. There was like no difference between all of those shows and real life. That's where I ended up living. So by the time I was 12, my mother handed me Linda Goodman's Astrology and said, here, go take care of yourself, basically. And there were no online charts. We didn't have the internet. So everything had to be done by hand. All the ephemerists had to get checked out of a library. So I would start casting charts and then play telepathy with my friends. Other people play different things. I play telepathy, like, oh, let's play cards. Let's see what the card is. Let's think about people and see if we can make them call us on the rotary phone. Anyway, one thing led to another. And then I took on a normal course of life, meaning that I went into education. I got a degree, went into education. Being psychic was not cool. It was not cool. It wasn't cool until it's still has places where it's not cool. It's much more accepted now than it was 20, 30 years ago. So I call myself a closet psychic. And I started working with kids. And then as I was working with kids, teaching English language arts, I started to see how psychic they were. And I just went with it. I mean, I couldn't suppress it. It was just my everyday life. And it's one thing that you can kind of hide who you are, but it always kind of bleeds out into other things. So that was the beginning of it.
Now, what got you started with what you're doing now, actually, bringing you to be able to start teaching others?
Yeah. Well, that happened through, I'd been playing around with it. And then by 2005, when The Secret came out, and I believe it was even 2004, What the Bleep, when those two movies came out, I gave myself permission to show them in school. And so I started to talk to the kids about affirmations. I started talking about law of attraction, frequency. And in the meantime, I had been a really big student of all of this. I was doing transcendental meditation with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi when I was 19. And I was a student of the Fourth Way. I'm not sure if people are familiar with the teachings of Gurdjieff and Ouspensky. He was a Russian mystic. So I've been involved in this awareness and consciousness since I was, a teenager. And when The Secret came out, it was like, okay, good. We can talk about The Secret. I can use this information. So I started teaching affirmations to teach to the test. We had to teach to the test back in the day. They still do. But we really had to make sure those numbers matched. So I had the kids do affirmations. All the answers come to me easily and effortlessly. Everything I need to know will be revealed. All answers are in my subconscious. I need to pull them out. I trust the answers I get. Anyway, this is New York City Public School. This is what they did. We had the highest scores in the district on English language assessment. Brought in the administrators. Okay, Melina, what are you doing in your classroom? Okay. Well, I said, we're doing law of attraction and we are doing affirmations. So the administrator said, you know what, we like what you're doing, but we're going to, we work within the boundaries of the public education system. So we're going to let you create an enrichment program, which I did. And it was during that time in this enrichment program, Chris, that I created Power to Create. We started doing remote viewing. We started doing telepathy. We started doing a conscious awareness, all these kind of fun things. And then one thing leads to another. I found a school in Washington State where this was normal curriculum. And there was blindfolded archery and telepathy and telekinesis and neuroscience. And I'm like, okay, this is where I want to go. And this is where I want my youngest son to go. So I set the intention. And of course, I got the job and I ended up teaching there in the school, in the private school for a year. My son went, moved across the country from New York to close to Mount Rainier. And then I stayed and taught for a year. He stayed for two. And then the school lost its funding. And after the school lost its funding, a group of parents came to me and asked me if I would be open to co-founding another school with them in the same location. To which I said, absolutely. So we had a few good months until we lost our funding. And then after we lost our funding, Chris, that was when I said, you know what? This work is too valuable. I'm going to do this on my own and teach this independently. So I worked in a few schools, public schools. I would go in on Fridays and work with the children. And then I did my own programs in my house, because or in or places like at the library or in other schools where I could have them come in, or centers, spiritual centers. And then the kids would come in and with their parents, and we would be doing this work. And then later on, you know, everything moved to online, especially during COVID.
That's incredible. You know, when I hear this, I wish that they would have offered me something like this as a child to go to. It's incredible that you're doing this. How resistant was academia to some of the things that you're trying to do? I thought it was incredible that they allowed you to do as much as you did, you know?
Yeah, it was very interesting. So, it was done through pretty much language. There were always ways. And so I approached it through thought and language create our reality. So I brought it in that way. And then the kids were so hungry for this work that it really started to take on a life of its own. So there's a bit of a tangent that I don't normally talk about. But during that year before I created the Power to Create, I had the children get involved in the Peace Alliance. When Marianne Williamson, Marianne Williamson, So she had something called the Peace, I think it was called the Peace Alliance, and Deepak Chopra was involved, and Michael Beckwith was involved, and Marianne Williamson. And so I enrolled my students into this working with the Peace Alliance. And so the school gave us permission to create little products, you know, like peace bracelets and things. And we ended up really getting a lot of money and able to donate this. And the administrators just loved that the kids were so involved from this area. Again, I was working in New York City, these are the demographics and the socioeconomic level of these children is below average, way below average. So to have the kids involved in these projects that also gained statewide recognition, and also, you know, recognition with the Peace, I think it was called the Peace Alliance. And this was a big deal. We got invited to the United Nations to listen to Gandhi's grandson deliver a speech in all connected to peace. And so this started to open up. So if you know, like, basically it's like, oh, if Melina can be doing all of these things with these kids in class, then let's give her some leeway to start doing some other things.
That's very cool. Now I want to talk a bit about your abilities in general. Now, could you tell us a little bit in more in detail what type of consciousness abilities you developed in yourself, and, you know, to what extent were you able to utilize them?
I don't like calling myself this, but I'm going to use it anyway. So I'm psychic, and I do readings, and I learned to read coffee grinds when I was in my early 30s. I had a mentor. She was an Israeli Moroccan Hazzah. These are seers. And so I learned how to read coffee grinds through her. And then I also just started reading. I learned a little bit about, I can't say I learned tarot because I don't know what the cards mean, but I did use tarot, and occasionally I will still use tarot if I'm doing public readings because I need something to focus on. So I started just taking all of this information that was available to me and channeling it. So I do readings, I can do psychometry, then that moved into remote viewing. And I started working part-time at the Long Island Psychic Fair, which is where John Edward got his start. And so many, I wasn't there when John left, when I got there. So some of my colleagues, so to speak, if you want to call them colleagues, right? Some of my, the other psychics. Okay. So they knew John, they had all worked with John. And then later on in life, when California Psychics picked up and started getting really big, that's the International Online Psychic Company. I went to work for them part-time also. So I'd be a school teacher during the day and then a psychic on weekends and in the evenings. So that is really how I got started. And it was always just, it was just a part of my life. That's, it was just there.
You said something earlier, reading coffee grinds. I've heard of this before, but could you explain? I'm not you know, too sure exactly what it's all about. And for the audience, could you explain about a little bit
more
about it?
Sure, absolutely. Oh, sure, sure, sure. So it's really fun and it's fascinating. We take Turkish coffee or any kind of coffee that has grinds, but Turkish coffee is usually the best. And then pour it into the cup. And then when the client has completed their drink of coffee, I flip the cup. It's called tassography. And then let the little bit of coffee drain out. And what we get are coffee grinds and formations. And then I just start reading what I see. Now, to somebody, it would, and then interpreting, it's like, maybe I'll see a dog. Okay. So if I see a dog in the cup, well, what does that mean? Again, we could say, oh, well, that dog means that somebody is very loyal to you. That is what dogs mean that in dream interpretation and symbology. But in this, we don't know. In this case, depending on the energy of the person, that dog could be somebody who's out to harm them. It doesn't have to be loyal and true and great. So that was a modem of getting into the psychic realm, which was also fun.
That's very interesting. Now, would you say that most everyone has the ability to access some of these hidden kind of dormant abilities, but it's just a matter of focus, practicing, and opening your mind to it? And some people will have, I guess, better access to different abilities than others, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So my take on this is that we all have it. We're all born with it. It's I like to call it our first sense. So before we go to speaking and smelling and touching and hearing, there's something happening while our brains, we're babies, we're infants, we're lying there. Something is going on and we are absorbing information. Now, we may not be able to process it, but that is the intuitive mind. That is that sixth sense. It is at work, in my opinion, from infancy on. And then what happens is, again, this is not scientific, all right? But we do know that there are windows of opportunity in the brain, the way the brain develops, so that if a person learns a language before age 12, this is really easy for them. The brain is adaptable to learning language. It's easy for children and young adults, kids, all right, to learn a second language while the window of opportunity is open. And that is the same with many of the other skills that we have. And that includes this particular skill. So although we're born with it, and everyone is born with it, depending on the parents, the education, the belief system, the way the parents respond to it determines whether the child will continue to use it. So have you ever seen the movie The Gods Must Be Crazy?
Yes, I have.
Okay. All right. So do you remember their language? They have a click in their language.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Now, we can't do that. All right. Why? Because nobody taught us how to click. So that is, for me, kind of like using our psychic ability. So imagine if you grew up in a family, and I've seen this because I worked with kids as young as 3. Imagine that you grow up in a family where telekinesis is normal. It is just the norm. Okay, maybe mommy and daddy can't do it that well, but they know that they can. Or what if they know that, oh, when I do Reiki, I can heal people distance. All right, this is a conversation. So the child grows up in this conversation knowing that this is possible. So then they don't question, they don't doubt, and they just learn. And so that is what some of the kids that I was working with, that is the environment that they came from.
So children apparently can, it's easier for them to develop these abilities if you focus them in on it from an early age. You'd say mm-hmm. they have more access to this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're children now, again, children are in the natural alpha state. It's our brainwave state. And we stay in the natural alpha state until we hit puberty. And we as adults have to go to meditate in order to get back into alpha, or we have to lie down on a sofa or couch, right, and get really drowsy and space out. And then we get into alpha. And children are naturally there until puberty. So imagine there's no veil, there's nothing there. They can see things. So now a little kid comes home and says, oh, there's a, I'm seeing an entity over there, or so-and-so is going to call. And then what happens? The parents are frightened. They may say, oh, that's your imagination. You're making that up. I mean, you know, just, I look at it like, I think I was pretty lucky that my parents didn't laugh every time I came up with something.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So talk about how the process of, you know, from a young child learning these psi abilities can create more compassionate young people with even more levels of higher esteem, confidence, et cetera.
Yeah. So let's start with a kid that learns let's start with what I teach three-year-olds. So with three-year-olds, I always start with focus and focused, sitting focused, and I call it tucking away the body. So imagine if we could sit for a few seconds and not move and become conscious of all the itching and things that we want to do. And now we're conscious. Okay, we're not going to move. We're going to sit here. We're going to sit here for 3 seconds and we're not going to move. And then during that time, there's a conversation. Well, did you feel like scratching? Yes, but you controlled it. Yes. Ah, connection. All right. I can control the itch. I can control the scratch. So now we start spending longer and longer time sitting and focusing without moving the body, tucking away the body. Now this leads to self-awareness of the body. All right. So some people don't even have that. Some adults don't even have self-awareness of the body. So look at children who are diagnosed with ADHD. They can't sit still. Why? They've never been trained to sit still. They've been screamed at to sit still, but the training on this has never happened. So they've never been consciously taught to sit still and consciously taught to focus where their awareness goes. So that is where I start. I teach children where to put awareness. So for example, I could do an exercise right now and I can, in your, just right now, think about a time where you went to a wedding and you had a really great time. And can you think about a time you went to a wedding and had a really great time? Okay. So by doing that simple thing, and all right, and think about a time that you had a really big meal that was so big that you really had a stomach ache afterwards. Do you have any of those?
Oh, yeah.
Or a time you played your guitar and you lost track of time. I see a guitar back there. And you just realized hours may have gone by.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. So now I just hijacked your awareness. I took you to a wedding. I took you to a big, heavy meal. I took you to a guitar place. I hijacked your awareness. So that is what happens to us all day long. And we are not taught to control our awareness. We're not taught to control where our focus goes. So an email comes, we run along that way. Something else comes, we run that way. And what I do with the kids is I teach them from early on to focus their awareness to where they want their awareness to go. Now, when you learn that skill really early, then you can start to bend the universe. That's part of the psychic realm. You have access to an area that other people do not have access to merely by being present, conscious, aware. And so now, if you're taught these skills really early on, and then part of this is also knowing that we are all tapped into a universal consciousness, or as I was talking to George Nouri the other night, and he called it the wireless internet of our minds, basically. So if we're all tapped into this and we're all part of the whole, like an avatar, why would we want to harm other human beings when what we do directly affects the rest of the world? So now the kids see this, the kids learn it. We do remote healing for other people. They see that this works. So why would they want to harm other people? So they're taught to respond rather than react. They're taught to take their awareness and their focus to where they want to direct it and not where it gets hijacked by somebody else. This leads to emotional intelligence. It also leads to the ability to stand up for oneself and even become like, I'm not going to do that. It doesn't feel right for me.
Right. And this would ultimately probably affect overall intelligence as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it may not make you a math genius and you may never want to do math again, you know, or have any of that, but at least a person who isn't a math genius or somebody who can look, I mean, there are other so many areas that we are skilled at just because we're not academically skilled to pass all of the tests that are given to us, or we don't follow the institutionalized curriculum that has been there for over 100 years. Doesn't make us unintelligent. Standardized tests do not measure our intelligence. So using your mind in a different way like this can actually be considered genius.
Now, you mentioned earlier about universal consciousness and how we're all connected, and I cover this in many shows, and the connection that I've come to realize is more profound than anything that I could have ever imagined. And my perception of everything connected to our understanding of this changes, you know, with the more I learn and the more I understand. But how could accessing and understanding this universal consciousness kind of help from a young age to establish some of these abilities?
Okay, so the abilities in terms, the psychic abilities are then practiced. Okay, so let's say we practice them, we practice remote viewing. But here's the thing, Chris, when we're practicing remote viewing, and I'm working with kids who are 2,400 miles away, and they can see in my big treasure box, okay, that I have where they can look in, and they get that right, a feeling of empowerment happens. And so then comes the realization, wow, if I can tap into Ellie's treasure box, which is 2,400 miles away, then I'm pretty powerful, and maybe I want to start to use my energy for something good. I mean, let's use it for healing the planet. Obviously, these things need to be taught. These have to be conversations, and that is part of the curriculum that I do. It's not just, oh yeah, let's do phenomena. Okay, let's go do spoon bending. Let's go see what's behind. Let's go psychically see what's behind this card. That is phenomena to me. And that's very cool. We can walk across a bed of hot coals, which I've done with my own son. But that doesn't turn over into higher consciousness. It can be an entryway and an access point. Because once you start doing this work, then you realize how empowered, how powerful you are, that it's coming from a different source. It is coming from universal consciousness, perhaps, and information is being downloaded, uploaded, coming to us. So we start to perceive the world very differently than people who are, for lack of a better word, purely three-dimensional in terms of, oh, if this is, there's nothing more to this than this. All right, that's it. So it's a whole different way of looking at the world. And then we also know that Max Planck taught us, the physicist, right, that the way we look at the world, the world changes according to how we look at it.
And
And
you talk about a very, for me, it's a very important word, awareness, and how it's equal to, basically concentration. But awareness is, it's so much more. It's, awareness of what's beyond our consciousness, what's outside the realm of our known nature of reality. It's just everything important that I believe most people don't focus on. Could you talk a little bit about how, the work you're doing is equal to basically training in awareness, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we stopped. So first of all, I'm going to go back to my book. So I wrote a book in 2017. It's called Children Who Know How to Know. And that in the beginning, it talks about I talk about intuition. Then I also talk about the brain. And then I go into thought and language. And then this again is that awareness. The words that we use create our reality. Our thoughts create our reality. And it is just that simple. So this becomes another form of awareness, becoming mindful, becoming conscious of the words that are coming out of your mouth. You know, if you're always saying, oh, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this, well, you know what? It's not going to be a big mystery. You're not going to be able to do it. And no one's surprised by it. So again, real early on comes this awareness of language and thought. Monkey mind chatter gives us our reality, and that we are responsible for everything that comes from out there. We become aware that we are so much more than our body, we're so much more than our mind. And so this is part of the training and the teaching.
That's great. I want to talk a little bit about remote viewing, and maybe you could tell us some of the techniques that you've used to do remote viewing, and maybe possibly some of the most profound instances you've had.
Well, okay, and I just want to let everybody know who's listening that I am not trained in any one particular remote viewing method. And so I am a member of the International Remote Viewers Association because I really identify with the work that they're doing. And I also feel that I needed a place to call home and have a tribe. And so the remote International Remote Viewers Association said, okay, look, you know, it's not really you're not really doing like typical remote viewing, but whatever it is that you're doing is working and it can be classified. So the kind of remote viewing that there's controlled remote viewing, which is a very in some ways, it's a very technical process, right? Where we get a target. And I use controlled remote viewing, even though I'm not officially trained, but I have so many colleagues that have, and I've been to so many conferences at IRVA that I know how to do it. And so what we do is we get a target and it's a number or a coordinate, it's called. And then we do the ideogram and start to draw. And then we go off and start to into layers of what we see. Now, this work is detailed. It can take some remote viewers weeks, months to go see what they're seeing. I don't do that kind of work with the children. We do more of an associative remote view, which is here's my treasure box. I'm going to guide you. We're going to look in there. We are not going to do the, again, the AOLs, the analytical overlay for people who don't know what that is. It's when we label the object. So for example, if there were a if the smiley card were in my treasure chest, and then a kid started to draw and they saw something round and they saw something yellow with black dots in there. So they might draw something that looks exactly like a smiley face. And if they did draw something that looked like a smiley face, then that would be a bullseye. That would be a hit, a real hit, but a bullseye, not a hit. But if they drew something and it was a big yellow circle, and then they labeled it the sun, see what happens there is that we go into what we know. We go into this space of, oh, it must be that because that's what I know. But really, it's just a big round yellow ball. It's not the sun. So when I teach this, and also the same, not just I, these are, you know, protocol of remote viewing, that we don't label. Okay, we describe to the best of our ability. We draw to the best of our ability. We do not label. Because what if we're seeing something, Chris, that hasn't been invented just yet, right? Or what if you're getting a remote view and maybe you don't know what this object is, but it does exist?
Would you say it's possible to remote view anywhere and anything within our reality, even in outer space?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are some of the most profound viewings that you might have done yourself? Anything interesting you could talk about?
But I can only talk about this. I remote viewed nanotechnology before nanotechnology had a name. And nobody, right. And there's a long story to that. I can't go into the details on that one. All right. But even I didn't know. I mean, obviously, I didn't know what I was looking at, but I drew what I was looking at and blew away a lot of people at that moment in time, because this was something that no one had shared with anybody yet. And that was a very profound moment for me as a remote viewer doing the work. And I like to talk about the things that the kids do, because and so my favorite example is during COVID, I was doing a psychic development course online for adults. And we had, I have this over here. So I had something that was a manila envelope. Let's just say something like this, but it was manila. It was an envelope, but it was an envelope. Okay. And I'm just using this because I want something to show. And in the envelope was an image, but not really, because we're on the computer screen. So the image was on the computer screen on the next slide. So there was a slide of a manila envelope, and then there was an image. And everybody, adults had all gone into the alpha state. So everybody had been in alpha and they were now drawing and writing down what they were seeing. And some participant's 5-year-old son did a walk by and he's like, "Mom, what are you doing?" She goes, "Oh, well, I'm looking in the manila envelope." And he goes, "Oh, Mom, that's easy." And she goes, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." So he sits down, Chris, and he starts to draw this figure with a sword and arms sticking out and black hair. And it's on my Facebook page somewhere. And he's drawing this character. And then he tells his mom, because he can't write, he goes, "Mom, it's power and dragons." Well, then came the big target reveal. And it was Jon Snow of Game of Thrones, power and dragons. So, right?
Wow. That's incredible.
So I've got a lot of those stories, and there's just a lot of those stories available. So
yeah, while we're there, let's hear a couple of more before we move on from remote viewing.
All right. So in my online course, I have a few of the successful. So I put together an online course where children and their parents can go do this themselves. It's self-paced with me talking and guiding them through it. And I have some images there of successful remote views that I was doing with a group of children during COVID. And the target was a pink cupcake. And here was a little girl. I think she was about, the image was a pink cupcake, and it wasn't, you couldn't see it because it was her homework assignment. And all she had was, "Here's a manila envelope. You go draw what's in here and come back to me next week and tell me what you've seen. Draw the picture, send it to me, be as specific as you possibly can." Anyway, she came back a week later and there was a cupcake with icing and the colors, and it was a bullseye. All right, so that was number two. And though I saved that image, I don't save a lot of the images. And then I also had an image of some planets, and the same child did a remarkable job getting the balls. She saw them as balls. And then one of the other, a really great remote view was by a little boy who was autistic. And his mom had brought him to my program. This is when I was doing in person in Washington. And she brought him there. Nobody had any expectations whatsoever about what was going to happen. And I had my treasure chest and I asked them all to draw what was in there. And he drew an elaborate rendition of a gold coin. And when we took out the coin that was in the treasure chest, the front of the coin was quite plain. The back of the coin had all of the intricate drawings that this autistic child had seen. So,
wow.
I see this a lot and I still get blown away by it, I have to tell you.
Yeah, that is incredible. Now, how would you describe your basic kind of a basic summary of how you teach children to remote view?
Well, I talk to them first, okay? And I tell them what it is that we're going to do. And then I share stories with them. And then I set them up. Like one of my favorite stories that I read to them is Annabelle and the Domino, which is a book that I wrote in 2011 based on a true story of a little girl who moved an object with her mind. So I set the stage for believe that this is possible. So we have this conversation that all things are possible. And I work with that, you know. And then once the ground is fertile, right, and everything is tilled over there, then I can plant the seeds, and then give them the instructions of what it is that they need to do and what they need not to do, like with their mind, okay, not to negate what they see. We let things come in, Chris, like a breeze, all right? So when you're remote viewing and you're doing psychic work, sometimes it'll be like a breeze passing by. And we then, like if I were to do a color, what color do you see, right? And everybody has like this particular color goes through. And then the key is not to negate that first impression or that color and not to overanalyze it and say, oh, well, I saw red, but it can't be red because I'm really feeling yellow, but maybe she's not going to do yellow. So, you know, that whole self-talk starts kicking in. Nah, she's not going to do yellow because the smiley card was just yellow. And now everybody knows better than anything. And then the color was yellow. So we talk about that. We talk about overcoming those limitations that we set upon ourselves. And then it's just, then we start practicing.
How big a part would you say does self-doubt and fear play into preventing people from accessing this?
That's it, though. That's it. Huge. Bigger than yeah. Huge. All right. So if it doesn't work, that's why. All right. It's your fear. It's your doubt. It is your self-talk about not being able to get the target right. All of this stuff.
So tell us a little bit more about some of the other things besides remote viewing, like telepathy or telekinesis that you're teaching the kids.
All right. So when I was teaching in school, which I don't have access to these things right now, but I will tell you future, we're looking into finding a place where we can be doing these things again in the real form, you know, like real with real people and not on Zoom. We used to do blindfolded archery. So what that is, we have the archery targets. This is what we did in the school. We have our archery targets, and then the kids are blindfolded. And then the target is, let's say, that way, but the children face this way. And then using your pineal gland, using your third eye, you see the target here, not here in front of your eyes. You see it here, and you go like that. And then believe it or not, guess what's going to happen? You're going to hit. You hit a bullseye. It's phenomenal to watch. All right. And there are no limitations because this goes real easy. So we did that. We would do a lot of telepathy, right? These are, you know, what's in the envelope, what color, what numbers. We did so much work in that. We also did something that it's kind of like telekinesis when you think about it. So because I was in a private school, things are very different in a private school. We can do more things than you can do in a public school. So I had this really great game, like it was it's roulette and it's a game. And so what we do with the roulette is we collectively as a group, we pick a number. And then we focus on that number. Let's just say 7. So everybody in the group is focusing 7, 7, 7, sending the energy of 7. So guess what happens? Guess what number will show up? 7. Now, it doesn't always happen at the first time. And I always look at it like that because the energy of the field has to connect to our energy. So we've got to get in alignment with it. We've got to get into the frequency of it. And then once we collectively are in a frequency, just we can have that thing, that ball land where we want it to on the number.
That's so interesting. And like I was telling you earlier, I wish, you know, I would have been offered to have been able to go to something like this as a child, because I think things like this, learning these skills, are way more important than a lot of the lies that they're, you know, teaching in you know, modern academia and through the education system. I mean, these are, you know, invaluable skills that people could basically hack life with and, you know, hack the matrix with, and it's incredible. So do you think that modern academia will ever maybe come around and take this, give this a second serious look? Because that the one school you were telling me about, and I think it was Washington, that sounded incredible. Sounded like a Hogwarts.
Yeah, well, those are private schools, okay? Yeah. And they're few and far between. That's why I ended up there. I didn't know of other schools that were closer to home that did this work. And when I mean home, I'm talking about New York. So the modern academia, the way, and this is not, you know, please don't take offense. Anybody who's listening to the, you know, listening to the show, who's, you know, from the institution, but you think about it, Chris, it's an institution. All right. It is an institution. And what does an institution want to do? It wants to keep us in, it wants to keep the participants of the institution in mediocrity. It wants to keep them in a place of servitude. Only a few people get to slip through the cracks, especially in certain public schools, depending again on the district that you live in, then you're entitled to so many more opportunities than children who are going to the larger public school institutions. And if they're very limiting, very controlling, very penal, very antiquated systems, and teaching for the most, I mean, teachers are, their intentions very often are thwarted. You know, you want to teach something really good and you want to teach something exciting, but then it's time to teach to the test. So it just, yeah.
Well, what kind of reactions do you get from even parents and just people on the street to what you're doing, say now compared to a few years ago? It seems like people are slowly becoming a little bit more open-minded to some of this stuff. Do you see that?
Yes. Yeah. A little bit. And again, it depends on what circles you're in. Mm. So I'm just going to tell you, I live in my son says to me, my oldest son, he said, "Now you live in utopia." And I said, "Yes, that's right. I do. I live in utopia. And everybody around me lives in the same utopia that I live in. And I live here by choice. And so I interact with people who also see the world the way that I see the world."
That's the thing right there.
And then when I do go into another dimension, I call it dimensions. Okay, I go into another dimension. And I'm seeing people kick their dog, or I'm seeing people screaming at their children. That to me is another dimension. That's the only way I can explain it to you. So if we were on tracks, right? If we were on these frequencies, on these tracks, like radio channels, well, that is a radio station that I am just not tuned into. And anybody who's going to be screaming at their child like that or kicking their dog is not going to relate to anything that I'm going to say. So, you know, I don't have those conversations.
Yeah. That's so interesting that you call them different dimensions, because I've thought for a long time each person has their own little journey and we're on different timelines. And especially right now, there's a lot of people living in this like super fear timeline. There's some people living in a super accepted, have to be accepted by everybody, or they have to accept whatever the mainstream is telling them. It's just, you're absolutely right about looking at it as different dimensions. I'm going to have to start thinking about it that way.
You know, I do. So like, you know, people who were, you know, people who are like going to, and it's just very different. It's, I can't explain it to you. Like, when I see people solo, and don't take this wrong, anybody listening. Okay. If I see a person out alone, they're alone. There's nobody out there on the street and they're wearing a mask. And I ask myself, okay, this is just a question. I mean, you're out there, the air is fresh. There's no other human near you. Why are you wearing this mask? Have you been so institutionalized? And maybe you feel comfortable. Maybe it keeps your mouth warm during winter. Okay, those are all possibilities. But to me, people who live in intense fear or intense fear, really, that's a different dimension for me. That's all. Like, yeah. I look at them like, oh, we're in parallel universes, all right? Even though I see you, but I don't see, you know, we're not seeing each other.
Are you seeing more parents allowing their children, or even more children wanting to be involved with the things that you're teaching? Have you noticed a difference in the time frame here?
No, unfortunately not. I will tell you, and what I have noticed is that years ago, the kids were more open to this than they are now. And I've looked at, you know, why is that? And I think part of the reason is that if you get a screen put in front of your face by the time you're 1.5 or 2 years old,
right.
You know, here's a screen, look at the screen, and you just go into that reality as a child. These people have no idea how damaging and dangerous this is because of the brainwave state on this right now. They have zero clue. But if you put your child in front of a screen like that all the time, why would a child later on want to have to stretch their thinking? It might hurt. Does that make sense? Like, oh, you know, I have to remote view, so I'm going to use a new muscle. Well, I could just look at my screen. Who cares? I can put on virtual reality and I can just do everything in virtual reality. Why do I need to know what's behind this card? Now, what happens is that later on, when they are in those jobs and they are in these positions and they are, you know, wondering why other people have, why are they not able to control, bend, create their reality the way other people are bending, creating, controlling their reality? Why is that not possible for them? And so I'm seeing more children not that interested. Parents are interested. Parents really want this. That's why I'm doing the parent and the child, so that there could be a conversation for it. But the child alone, you know, few kids gravitate to it. But for the most part, I think that it's much easier to watch television or your iPad or your phone.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's a very sad state, but you're absolutely right on that. Now, do you communicate or work with spirit at all?
I don't know how to answer that, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
The reason why is because when I'm doing a reading for a reading for a client, what comes through most of the time is what the client believes. I'm like a vehicle. So if somebody, and I don't know this about the client, like if somebody's, you know, somebody believes in God and Jesus and Mary, and perhaps they have a bit of a religious background, or they have a connection to Mary, Jesus, the archangels, you know what, that comes through in the reading. And then those are the people that come into the reading. People who are really into aliens, I've had aliens come into the readings. All right. So what is the spirit? Who do I work with? I call it the God force. Okay. When I'm doing my own personal work, I work with what I call the God force, white light, God force, tapping into universal God force energy.
Very interesting. And would you say that this God force, does it communicate psychically, or does it give you message? How do you basically communicate with this God force?
Knowingness and prayer. intention and then a knowingness and then being aware of this, let's call it the signs. Okay. Now we can say, oh, may I, you're make things mean, you know, a blue jay will fly by. Okay. And now a blue jay flying by could just be a blue jay flying by, but yet depending on what had been asked earlier, or maybe a few minutes ago, that blue jay flying by might be coming with a meaning. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah. And it's, again, it's this awareness. It's paying attention and being cognizant to your awareness when we go out, when we're out in nature, when we're out in the city, when we're doing things that we are focused, we are aware, we're conscious. You know, great exercises sometimes is just to stop in the middle of your day and then ground yourself in a consciousness, you know, to realize, well, who, you know, like, who am I? Where am I? I'm part of a big, like an actor on a stage of a big universal play. Well, that kind of takes away monkey mind, right? It puts you in theater and you could see all the other people around you as theater participants.
Let's end on this. How far do you think us as humans can take the ability of manifestation in what we're trying to apply in our lives? I know, like for myself, I completely believe that I manifest exactly where I am right now. You know, before I was doing this podcast, I had a horrible job that I hated every day. And, you know, it was a long, beautiful series of events of, you know, spiritual experiences. But I know that this was my end goal, where I wanted to be. And I completely believe that I manifested that through the way. But what's the, you know, how far can we take manifestation in our own lives?
I think with patience and giving up being greater than God, and knowing the answers and how it's supposed to go down, there's no limit. Chris, I had somebody have $300,000 worth of debt disappear off a computer screen out of an account. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's incredible.
We worked on it. We worked on consciously. We worked on it. And then I got the phone call, Ellie, it's gone. What do I do? Do I call them? So you're out of your mind. You wanted it gone. It's gone. You don't go looking for it. Where are you going to find it?
Right.
Where are you going to find that? So that's just, I've had cases like this. This is not, again, this is, results are not typical, but results are. Okay. It depends on who it is and what they want. We have had remarkable manifestations.
That's amazing. And one more thing that I'd like to hear about, profound success stories with telekinesis or being able to manipulate material objects with the kids?
The kids, so far, the children, I've only had three kids do dominoes in the course of my lifetime so far. Now, it takes time. It takes a lot of time. It takes to move a domino with your mind, okay, with the energy. First of all, you've got to be sitting away from the table so that the domino is upright. You're not moving it. And it takes time for this energy transference. So the kids have to be really patient. Minimum amount of time is 20 minutes. That is just sitting quietly without moving your body for 20 minutes, Chris. Imagine being 9 years old and not moving 20 minutes.
I can't do that now. Wow.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And that will get the energy to move the domino. Not many people are able to do it. It's got a belief. I haven't seen it too often. I have my own telekinetic stories, but they're too long to go into right now. And they sound outrageous anyway. So,
well, I don't know. I'd like to, maybe if you could condense one into a few minutes, I'd love to hear it.
Real quickly, when I moved into my apartment complex, there's a fountain outside. It's aesthetically beautiful, but it's constantly pounding and pounding and pounding. And so I couldn't open the windows because it was just annoying 24/7 pounding. And I said, okay, this thing's got to go. And I decided that I was going to start using telekinetic power to stop the fountain. So I would go out in front of my window. I'm kind of shy about doing this in public, right? So I'd go in front of my window. I'd take all the energy. I'd start going from up here. I call it the God force, bring that energy down into my hands, rub my hands together, stick my hand out to the fountain like that and tell it to stop. So I would do this for like 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And then Lo and behold, guess what happened? I have to tell you. All right. Fountain stopped.
Right.
Well, I got good at that and kept going at it and at it. All the other fountains were working. And then maintenance came and they were like, I heard them. I overheard them from the window. Why is this one fountain always broken? And all the other fountains are great. You know, and I'm like, yes, that's why. Well, anyway, lo and behold, guess what? Fast story. Management removed all the fountains, Chris. They are all gone.
Oh, wow.
That's so incredible. Did I do that? I say, yes, I did that.
Oh, for sure. That's great. I love it. And there's, Ellie, there's so much more we could talk about. This is fascinating. I'd love to have you back on sometime in the near future.
I'd love to come back, Chris. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, before you go, let the audience know if they're interested in finding out about more about what you do, your work, and maybe getting the kids involved. What's the best way they can do so?
All right. So thanks for asking. I have a 16-page free guide that you can download on my website. It's called What If. You go to the Psy Kids tab and it's called What If. It's 16 pages, free guide, 6 ways to tap into your child's inner magic. Great exercises for working with the child within us. Even adults can use this, or with kids. So that's one way. Then I have something called the Midnight Portal, where it is once a month I teach in there. There's a lot of stuff about developing our psychic abilities. And I have an online course for children and their parents, which is, of course, Make Magic Happen. And that is all available at PsyKids. And if people, adults, are interested in readings or working with me, they can find me on my website, elliemolina.com, and they can schedule their own personal psychic readings so then they get an idea of how I work. And then they could see if I want to be working with their children also.
Excellent. Like I said, fascinating stuff, and I can't wait to talk to you again in the future. I had a great time.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Of course, we'll talk again soon. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We will talk again tomorrow.